Live from Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville, it is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, the site of Smashville Live coming up at the top of the hour. Ryan Johansson and Colton Sissons will be here as the special guest for Smashville Live alongside Braden Gall and Hal Gill. So that should be a lot of fun as the guys are going to be here the night after a 3-0 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks. Ryan Porth here, joined by Adam Vinken of The Athletic. Adam, we have a ton to get to from yesterday. We will be getting to Roman Josi here in a few minutes. But last night was complete and utter domination by the Nashville Predators. It easily could have been 6 or 7-0, with the final score being 3-0.
I think that was as close to a perfect game by the Nashville Predators that I've seen in many years. I believe the shot counter was 51-20 in favor of Nashville. The 51 shots, I think, were tied for the third most in franchise history.
The Preds had more shots on net than Chicago had shot attempts.
Well, there you go. If it weren't for Robin Lehner, who had a fantastic game for the Chicago Blackhawks in net, it would have been a lot worse than 3-0. But Nick Bonino gets the hat trick for what our friend Jim Diamond calls the Amber Waves of Grain line, with Nick Bonino, Rocco Grimaldi, and Craig Smith, all Americans, of course.
Yes.
That, when you think about what this Nashville Predators team is equipped to do, we've seen them score a lot of goals this season, obviously. The defense in the first several games was a bit iffy. You've seen it really tighten up in the last few games. Pecorino has consecutive shutouts. He said after the game last night that that may have been one of the easier shutouts he's pitched in his career.
It's really hard to disagree with that.
He really faced very few, not just shots, but quality shots.
I'm sure there were a few times last night where Pecorino felt like Julie the Cat Gaffney in Mighty Ducks, where he's just kind of sitting back there all alone and just kind of whistling to himself as his team is on the other end of the ice and it's completely a landslide that way.
Yeah, it certainly felt that the ice was significantly, it was significantly tilted in the Predators' favor. But I asked Pecorino after the game where he feels he's seen, where what he feels has been the source of the improvement on the defensive end of the ice, and he said they're just holding on to pucks more. Sometimes the best defense is a good offense, and if you're not turning the puck over and you have the puck on your stick and you're throwing shot attempts at the net with as much frequency as the Predators were last night, they didn't have to play much defense. Mm-hmm. And Peter Laviolette said that was a big part of it. You know, the layering in the offensive zone has been improved as well, so that when the puck does start moving in the opposite direction, they're in better position to prevent the counterattack, which was a problem in the first few games of the season. So everything, start to finish, I think Peter Laviolette said it was as strong of a performance as he's seen, and he's seen a lot. So, I mean, especially that game at home against Chicago, for Predators fans, it couldn't have gone any better.
So now 4 straight wins for the Nashville Predators. They push their record to 8-3-1 overall this season. You mentioned how Nick Bonino had a hat trick. It was his third career hat trick. Rocco Grimaldi had his first career 3-point game, assisting on all 3 goals for Nick Bonino. So Bonino with the hat trick, Grimaldi with 3 points, Pecorino was with a shutout, and this team is absolutely rolling right now. In these last 4 games, they've won all 4, all in impressive fashion in different ways.
No, it's looked good. They went 1-2 on that 3-game road trip to Los Angeles, Vegas, and Arizona. And they came home and they lost in a shootout to Florida in the game which they were trailing 2-0. Another game where they had to make a comeback in the third period to earn a point. But since then, they've really played well. I thought they played well in Tampa on Saturday. I thought they played well against Minnesota last week. Things are certainly looking up. I mean, remember, this team got off to a great start last year. What was it, 13-3 mm-hmm. to start the season, and then injuries struck, and they were really a .500 team the rest of the way, despite finishing with 100 points and winning the Central Division. So,
long season.
It is a long season. I don't expect them to continue to score at the rate that they have. Their shooting percentage is rather inflated. It will regress. But for right now, it's important at the beginning of the season. You know, you hear players all the time talk about how you can't win, you know, a division title, for example, in October, but you can lose it if you fall behind too quickly and don't bank those points. So starting the way that they have, you know, it helps build a little bit of a cushion. So when the inevitable lulls hit, they have some room to wiggle. They have some wiggle room.
So before we get to Roman Josi, I have a thought on Chicago from last night.
All right.
I legit felt bad for Robin Leonard, who had to make 48
saves. I did
saves.
Too, yes.
Rarely do you ever see a team in the National Hockey League offer less pushback than Chicago did last night.
Yeah, they're in an interesting situation, that Blackhawks team. They have been for a couple of years. I mean, since they were swept by the Predators in that first-round series in 2017, they haven't qualified for the playoffs. You know, you're getting to the point where, you know, for example, last night, Brent Seabrook was scratched for a second consecutive game. That seems to be heading, you know, for a messy divorce.
Yep. Patrick Kane got hit with an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in the third period.
Right.
Their frustrations were showing.
Robin Leonard, you know, playing really well. What does that mean for your doppelganger, Corey Crawford? if anyone's never seen it, you know, look up a picture of Corey Crawford on Google and look at Ryan. They're basically the same person.
Pretty much.
But, yeah, that team is really in the midst of, you know, I'm not sure how you would describe it. It seems like a rebuild is necessary. I mean, they won their cups, and this is sort of the price you pay when you have that success. You know, they were able to sustain it for several years, turning over the roster, bringing in younger players and cheaper players. But I feel like now that cycle has started to run out, and you know they've had a home heavy schedule. You know, right before they came to Nashville, I think they played 7 consecutive games at home, and they won, I think, 2 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're in some trouble in Chicago. Not that anyone sitting here tonight is having any sympathy for
Correct.
The Chicago Blackhawks, but they are certainly in trouble.
I don't think Jeremy Colleton is a very good coach.
I mean, I mean it's hard to replace Joel Quenneville after all of the things that he was able to accomplish in Chicago, but he's young and didn't have that NHL head coaching experience. So, you know, who am I to judge how a coach does his job? I certainly couldn't do it, but
Yes, you could.
Nah.
Don't sell yourself short.
I'm a
Adam.
Great armchair general manager, but not so much coaching.
Aren't we all?
Yes. But it does seem a bit that, you know, push is going to have to come to shove in Chicago at some point.
Speaking of the general manager, yesterday David Poile made it official with Roman Josi, signing him to an 8-year contract worth over $72 million that will keep him in Smashville. Yeah, you guys can cheer.
Yeah.
That will keep him in Smashville through the 2027-2028 season. That is a long time from now, Adam.
That is a long time. Almost nine years.
This was a complete no-brainer for the Nashville Predators, for David Poile. We talked a lot over the offseason and early in the regular season how Roman Josi had most of the leverage. There really wasn't an alternative, that this had to get done. And I think there's relief on both sides that this did get done as early as it did, even though I think a lot of people expected it to maybe get done before the season started.
Yeah, it did take longer than anticipated. And the last time we were together on Insiders, we were talking about it, and we both said that we never felt as if though it wasn't going to get done. Both sides, Roman Josi and his agents and David Poile and Brian Poile, you know, everybody felt it was going to get done eventually, but this was a delicate negotiation. I mean, this contract, and we're going to talk about it, I think, in the next segment, not only has an impact on Roman Josi's future, but the long-term trajectory of this franchise and from a cap situation. So there's a lot that went into it. It was important for Roman Josi's agents for Roman to be the third highest-paid defenseman in the NHL, which he will be starting next season behind Erik Karlsson at $11.5 million. And behind Drew Doughty at $11 million. Roman Josi at 9.059, continuing the hockey trend of players thrusting their jersey numbers into the back of their into the back of their cap hits. But, you know, there is risk involved. I mean, Roman Josi is going to be 30 when this contract starts. You know, it's an 8-year contract. It's a large cap hit. It's the largest cap hit handed out by the Predators in their history, surpassing the $8 million they gave to Ryan Johansson in July of 2017 and Matt Duchene on July 1st of this year. He has a full no-movement clause throughout the duration of the contract, which is a rarity for David Poile, which means Roman Josi has complete control over his career. If he doesn't want to go anywhere for the rest of his career, he has absolutely every right to do that because he's in control. There's a lot of risk in that. But Roman Josi is an elite offensive defenseman in this league. He does have his flaws on the defensive end, but he is an elite offensive defenseman in this league, and he should age well, age gracefully. Yeah, by the back end of this contract, when he's 36 or 37, it may not look great, but for the next several years, 4 or 5 years, as long as he continues to play at the rate he is, you know, it should represent great value even as the cap rises. The percentage of the cap he takes up won't be as big. But as we'll talk about next, there are some really tough decisions that are going to come out of this contract.
So you had a very detailed and thorough explanation of how all this went down at The Athletic earlier today. Real quick, what was maybe the one thing that stood out to you and what you gathered with everyone that you spoke to over the last 30 hours or so since the news broke?
Well, I thought it was interesting that David Poile brought up during the press conference that 2 weeks ago he and Brian Poile met with Roman Josi in Arizona. It was October 16th.
Two weeks ago today.
2 weeks ago today. It was after their incredibly optional practice in Arizona. During the lengthy conversation, David and Brian laid out their vision for the future, you know, how Roman fits into that future, how the rest of the team fits around Roman. And his agents, he had represented by two agents, Judd Moldaver and Jeff Jackson. And Jeff said that it's uncommon for a player to be in that, you know, to have that sort of conversation with management. But it was a collaborative decision. The agents and David and Brian and Roman all felt it was a good idea for them to have that sort of that meeting where both sides could hear each other out. It certainly sounded like it was productive and positive and helped negotiations along. I just thought that was interesting just because oftentimes, as Jeff Jackson said, you know, players don't want to be involved in these negotiations. That's why they have agents. It's so that they take care of that and they relay the information back to the player. But, you know, with Roman standing in the organization, you know, it wasn't a conversation that David Poile was going to have with many other players. I believe they had similar conversations with Pekka Rinne when his contract was coming up recently last year. So I thought that was very interesting. It was sort of it was a unique situation and not something that, you know, Jeff and Judd would recommend their clients normally do, but they felt like considering the circumstances, it was a good idea.
Coming up next, what are the different layers of this Roman Josi contract? What are the different impacts that this contract will have both short and long term? We will get into that next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders live from Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. More to come on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, live from Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. Smashville Live coming up at 7 o'clock. Ryan Johansson and Colton Sissons, the special guest. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic, covering the Predators, doing a fantastic job doing so with The Athletic. Last night, the Preds beating the Blackhawks 3-0. But earlier in the day, Roman Josi signed his new contract, 8 years, over $72 million. He became the third highest-paid defenseman in the National Hockey League. And, Adam, I think there are a lot of different layers, a lot of different elements that this impacts short and long term that I kind of want to unpack with you in this segment. And the first is the impact on the salary cap, because obviously Roman Josi has been at $4 million for the last 7 years. Now that's going to get a pay raise of over $5 million against the cap for the next 8 years starting next season. So in your mind, what is the impact on the salary cap of this Roman Josi extension?
Well, one thing that's remarkable to me, and we've talked about this, I think, throughout the summer, that this season, in the final year of Roman's current contract, with a $4 million cap hit, there are 86 defensemen in the NHL this season who cost more against the cap than Roman Josi. 86. And next year there will only be two. So he's moving on up, as the Jeffersons would say. But when you think about the implications of the cap, so of course the cap is expected to rise again. And it's more about these days. It's less about the number of the cap hit, the amount of the cap hit, and more about the percentage of the cap that a contract takes up. So when the cap goes up, Roman's contract over time won't take up as much, space on the cap. But I mean, this coming summer, the Predators have several players who are unrestricted free agents, headlined by Mikael Granlund and Craig Smith. That list also includes Austin Watson, Rocco Grimaldi, Mika Salamaki, Dan Hamhuis, Yannick Weber, and Matt Irwin.
Yep.
So there are going to be a lot of pending unrestricted free agent players on this team that are not going to be on this team anymore just because they're not going to have the room. They're really going to have to make some tough decisions. And, of course, other things can happen. For example, Kyle Turris has a $6 million cap hit through this season and the next four after. And if they were to trade him at some point, that would obviously clear a lot of room. But if that isn't the case, it's hard to imagine a scenario right now where both Mikael Granlund and Craig Smith are on this team next year. I mean, Mikael Granlund is making 5.75 against the cap this year.
Yep.
Craig Smith at 4.25. Craig will be 31 before the season starts next year, I believe. Mikael Granlund is currently 27, I believe. So it just seems like it's not going to work to be able to keep both of them, probably, unless something else happens. So, it's going to come down to, who performs better this season, or what.
Or who's more maybe cost-effective moving forward beyond this season.
Right. I mean, Craig Smith, for example, at entering his age 31 season, probably won't cost as much on a long-term deal or a longer-term deal than Mikael Granlund, who will be still in his late 20s and still in his prime years. Craig is out of his prime years. He's still an incredibly effective player, but on the downslope of his career just based on his age. So there's going to be a notable player on this roster this season who's not going to be on this team next year, most likely, based on the Roman Josi extension.
So one interesting layer of this contract is the fact that Roman Josi received a no-movement clause.
Correct.
And we all know GM David Boyle does not like giving out no-movement clauses. And before we comment on that, David Poyle yesterday commented on Josi having the no-movement clause and why he put it in the contract.
Or if I was a full no-movement clause in this contract?
Yes.
Something that you obviously don't give out easily.
No. It was one of those things that could basically go into ownership at that level. It's something that obviously Roman wanted very badly, and something that we covet very much. But for Roman, I think this is a unique and a special situation for someone that's our captain and someone that's going to be here for, I think, the rest of their career.
That was David Poyle on why he gave Roman Josi a no-movement clause. And then Roman Josi commented on why a no-movement clause was important to him.
Roman, why is such a clause important to you?
Well, because you want to stay here, obviously. I mean, I always wanted to stay in Nashville. I wanted to be here for the next 8 years, and I want to play only for Nashville for the rest of my career. So I think it was really important for me. It was really important for my family, for my wife, and it was definitely something we put a lot of weight on.
So that was Roman Josi on receiving the no-movement clause in his new contract that he just signed. So, Adam, I ask you this. Do you feel like the no-movement clause has been maybe a little overblown in this discussion, or is it a legit thing that the fact that David Poyle hasn't handed many out and he now is giving one to Roman Josi, and maybe this starts a precedent for players in the future now saying, look, Matt Duchene got a modified no-trade clause. Roman Josi got a no-movement clause. Why can't I get one?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because after the question that David answered that you played, I brought that up to David, and I said, with Roman receiving a full no-movement clause and Matt Duchene receiving a partial no-trade clause, has your stance on trade protection softened? And he flatly said no. He's like, much deserved.
No, Adam.
Referring to Roman Josi, but no. So, you know, we talked about this during, during the summer, that with Matt Duchene receiving that modified no trade clause in the final 3 years of his contract, that it sort of cracked the door open, and that Roman Josi and his representatives were going to push right through and say, if Matt Duchene is getting this, we should get that. And I think, you know, that was, and talking with his agents yesterday, and that was incredibly important. I mean, that was maybe the most important thing was, and what they tried to explain to David Poile was, I know that they know that this is not something he wants to do. It's out of his comfort zone to do, but Roman Josi is a player you make the exception for, and they credited David Poile for realizing that and stepping up and offering that in the contract. So, you know, we talk about it just because, you know, David Poile has done such a great job over the last several years of not handing those out. I mean, Ryan Johansson doesn't have one. Philip Forsberg doesn't have one. Ryan Ellis doesn't have one.
Kyle Turris
doesn't have one. Victor Arvidsson doesn't have one. Pekka Rinne has one in the 2 years of his contract. Matt Duchene now for the final 3 years of his contract. So, I think it is an exception to the rule, but you have to imagine that the agents of other players, whether it be Philip Forsberg or Mattias Ekholm or Victor Arvidsson, are going to jump on that as well and try to state their case for their client to also receive the same treatment.
So the other layer of this that I wanted to get with you on was just the fact that this contract for Roman Josi is going to go through his age 37 season,
yep,
through 2028. And I get what you're saying, what you did say last segment, and what you've said before is that there is risk involved. But the Predators had no choice in this. There was no alternative to not giving Roman Josi this contract.
Right.
Or no alternative that was going to benefit the franchise.
No, I agree. And that's part of the long-term planning that the Predators are going to have to do. I mean, we were talking about Brent Seabrook earlier, and you know, Brent Seabrook and Roman Josi are two totally different defensemen, but Brent Seabrook is older, he's slower, he's got 3 or 4 years left on the contract that pays him, you know, I think between $7.5 and $8 million a year, and now he's a very expensive, healthy scratch.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine a scenario, you know, it's hard to imagine a scenario where that happens to Roman Josi, but, you know, in 5 or 6 years or 6 or 7 years, you know, that might be the case. And look, if the Predators win a Stanley Cup before then and Roman Josi continues to be a Norris-caliber defenseman for the first 4 or 5 years of that contract and he racks up the accolades, then you can forgive the back half of that contract. But, you know, this was his one opportunity to cash in. He was playing under a contract for the past 7 years that was incredibly team-friendly. As I mentioned, 86 defensemen this season were making more money than Roman Josi.
And he's a top 5 to 7 defenseman in the league.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, this was his time. This was the only opportunity he was going to have to make his, you know, make what he's worth. So, you know, the Predators weren't going to let him get away. He was in no hurry to leave. You know, maybe when we're doing Predators Insiders, when we're 5 or 6 years older and we're talking about Roman Josi, we can get there. But for now, okay. You know, it looks like it was the best possible deal for both sides.
So, fellow defenseman Alex Pietrangelo in St. Louis is also an unrestricted free agent coming
right
up at the end of the season. Do you think he's smiling after yesterday's news? Do you think he's maybe a little disappointed that that number wasn't higher? How do you think that impacts Pietrangelo?
I'm wondering. I'm not sure if Alex Pietrangelo is on the same
tier
as Roman Josi. He's a great defenseman, you know, great, you know, captain of the St. Louis Blues, played a pivotal role in them rebounding from a terrible start last year and winning the Stanley Cup. So, you know, when it comes time for him, I wonder if he's more in the eight and a half,
yeah,
you know, closer to the, you know, Oliver Ekman-Larsson contract, which is 8.25.
Okay.
So I see him in that range. I don't see. I mean, I'm sure Roman Josi's contract helps maybe boost Pietrangelo's value a little bit, but I don't think they're on the same level to ultimately where Yoshi's contract is going to have a significant influence over Petrangelo's.
Coming up next, live here at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville, we will get back to the Preds' 3-0 win over the Chicago Blackhawks last night at Bridgestone Arena. That's all coming up next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders live on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Grimaldi out by the blue line on the left point for Yossi. Wandering that half wall, turning is Smith, gives it back to Grimaldi. That shot stopped, and the rebound to score! Nick Foligno! It's 1-0 Nashville! Sent back there for Craig Smith, shaking off to Hahn, trying to center it. And Strom came over to add in the defensive effort. Right point, Fabro, a shot stopped in front, and the rebound is shoveled in! Second effort there. Predators extend their lead to 2-0. Smith at the blue line. Irwin, a one-timer. That goes wide. Rebound out for Hamhuis. Got it around Nylander. Held left side. Quick shot there. That goes off the Miller. And the rebound and the score. Yep, it's time for hats, folks.
That's how it sounded last night on the Fifth Third Bank Nashville Predators Radio Network. Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call as Nick Foligno scored his third career hat trick in a 3-0 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks. A hat trick in a 3-0 victory means that was a natural hat trick for Nick Foligno. So of all the attempts that they had 70 shot attempts, the Preds did, to Chicago's 35. I mean, it was complete and utter domination, as I said earlier in the show. Of all the attempts that the Preds scored on, the three they scored on were the three that Foligno scored right there in the crease. Hal Gill would call them greasy goals. And they had so many opportunities for highlight reel goals. And the three that they scored on, of all the attempts they had, were those three by Foligno.
Yeah, and I think that's good. As you mentioned, they did have some opportunities to score some prettier goals. But it's important to be able to score goals from those, as we like to call them, high danger areas right in front of the net. And, you know, that line with Craig and Rocco and Nick, they're great at, you know, cycling the puck in the offensive zone and throwing the puck towards the net and, you know, mixing it up in front of the net. You saw that, you know, to perfection last night. You know, how they played last night is how you want that line to play every night. And it's not always going to be that easy or seem that easy. Mm-hmm. That's why they seem to complement each other very well. So that is encouraging as well. Not just the offense in general, but I think from where they're getting the offense, the areas on the ice.
Well, and Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson could have capitalized as a duo on many chances last night. I mean, if not for Robin Lehner having to just stand on his head all night long, easily could have been 6 or 7-0. Easily.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, it reminded me of the game in Arizona that the Predators lost a couple of weeks ago, and UC Soros was, I thought, great in that game. And Peter said after the game he was not pleased. He said if it weren't for UC, they would have won, I think, 16. They would have scored 14 goals or 15 goals or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt watching Robin Lehner last night. If it weren't for him, that could have been a 6-7-8-0 game.
So last night was the fourth of a 4-game win streak. They beat Anaheim last Tuesday 6-1.
Yep.
They beat Minnesota last Thursday 4-0.
Mm-hmm.
They came back to beat Tampa Bay Saturday 3-2 in overtime. And then they shut out Chicago last night 3-0. And the goal differential in the 4-game win streak is 16-3, which is awfully impressive, not only offensively, but defensively as well. And that's something that I know you talked about a lot with Peter Laviolette, Pecorine, and others last night, just kind of detailing why the overall team defense has improved from maybe the first 5, 6, 7 games of the season.
Right. So as you mentioned, they've allowed 3 goals in their past 4 games, 2 shutouts. You know, starting the season, they allowed 2 against Minnesota, 5 against Detroit, 2 against San Jose, 5 against Washington, 7 against Los Angeles, 2 against Vegas, 5 against Arizona. You know, a lot of really, you know, weak defensive performances, for lack of a better adjective. But as we were talking about earlier, I feel that the Predators have done a better job of controlling the puck, not turning it over, having better play in the neutral zone, making better decisions, and as we saw last night, as I said earlier, the Predators were on the attack for most of the game. They really didn't have to play much defense. And I feel like that's what Peter Laviolette wants to do. I mean, you don't have to play defense if you're holding the puck. So good on them for being able to make the necessary corrections to put them in a position to win, you know, more soundly.
Well, in the first couple weeks, I saw a lot of Preds fans on social media or what have you really complaining about the team defense. And I was kind of sitting back saying, give them time to figure this out. They just lost P.K. Subban on defense, a pretty big blow, and you're replacing him with a very green defenseman, albeit a very talented young defenseman in Dante Favreau. In terms of a role, you've got to give this time. You've got to give this mix time to gel. And I kind of feel like steadily over the course of this month of October, that team defense has slowly been getting better to a point where they're still scoring a lot offensively, but they are keeping the puck out of the net a lot more than they did in the first couple weeks.
Yeah, and it helps to have Pecorine back there. He's been fabulous this season. And I was reading Greg Wyshynski's first Awards Watch post on ESPN.com the other day, and I believe he had Pecorine as the favorite for the Vezina Trophy, or maybe in second place at the time. You have his numbers in front of you.
Pecorine is 7-0-1 with a 1.74 goals against average and a .937 save percentage with two shutouts.
And that 7-0-1 record is tied with Tomas Vokoun from the 2005-2006 season as the longest season-opening point streak for a goaltender in Predators history.
Look at you bringing out
the
knowledge.
The K stands for knowledge, as our friend Jeremy Gover would say.
Yes.
But, you know, UC Saros had a rough start to the season, but I thought he was really good in Tampa. And I know that the team felt that they had let him down. And that's not something they've not said before. They said similar things last year, that they feel like they played their weaker games in front of UC. And I thought that they did a much better job in Tampa of supporting him defensively, and he was good when he needed to be. He made some great saves. I recall this breakaway save he made on Steven Stamkos and in the second period. But, you know, if he can get on track too, you're in really great shape. But Pecorine, you know, continues to defy his age. As we mentioned, he turns 37 on the 3rd of November. You know, goaltenders at that age should not be playing as well as he is, but he's doing very well.
He is aging like a fine wine, at least for now.
As they say.
This is Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vinken of The Athletic, live from Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. And this place is super awesome. This is your first time here, right,
Adam?
It
is, and I don't live too far away. I live about a five-minute drive.
And you'll be coming back, right?
I will. I like it.
There's so many TVs in here. I know I'm staying around for not only Smashville Live, but Game 7 of the World Series coming up here in a little bit. So they've got all sorts of specials, two-for-one select local drafts, all domestics and liquor, two-for-one house Bloody Marys and mimosas during their happy hour, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. to close. And they've got 40-plus beers on tap. Just, there's not a seat in here that you can't see a TV.
No.
You can look around and see probably, you know, close to two dozen TVs from where we're sitting.
Yeah, except for these couple of screens that have us on it. You know,
yes.
I'm not sure I like looking at myself talking. So I'm going to look at the, you know, you've got the World Series, you've got Wednesday night hockey, you've got some golf.
Where Bob McKenzie is currently talking about Roman Josi.
Oh, there he is.
New contract with the Nashville Predators.
And a sharp sports coat.
Yeah, you've got nothing in your closet like that.
No.
Not even close. Coming up next, we'll look ahead to tomorrow night's game between the Preds and the Flames, and what will this lineup look like when Philip Forsberg does come back. That's all coming up next. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. The sight of Smashville Live. Coming up at the top of the hour, Hal Gill and Braden Gall are in the house. They will be joined by Ryan Johansson and Colton Sissons coming up here in a little over 10 minutes here where we are sitting right now, Adam Vigan of The Athletic. So that should be a lot of fun coming up at 7 o'clock. And tomorrow night, the Nashville Predators will host the Calgary Flames, a special Halloween home game for the Preds, and it will be Philip Forsberg bobblehead night.
Ah.
If you had to guess, Adam, is Philip Forsberg going to return from injury on his bobblehead night?
Well, that would be poetic. I imagine he's going to play either tomorrow or Saturday.
Okay.
I mean, he practiced with the team on Monday. He skated yesterday, I believe, before the game. They did cancel practice today, but he might have skated. I mean, I know he skated on Sunday, I believe, with Matt Duchene, who missed Saturday's game but did come back last night. So, you know, the sooner he gets back in the lineup, the better. Of course, we know how great Forsberg, Duchene, and Granlund were as a line in that first 5-6 games or whatever it was before Philip got hurt. And I feel like since Phillip's been out of the lineup, the production of Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund has diminished.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be helpful, I think, for multiple players and the team in general to have Phillip back in the lineup, whether it's tomorrow or Saturday.
So tomorrow night the Preds host the Calgary Flames, a Flames team that has had a lot of success at Bridgestone Arena. If you think of the last 5 seasons,
okay,
the Calgary Flames have won, I'm doing quick math on the fly here, they have won 7 of their last 8 games in Nashville.
I believe their only visit last year was the Predators' home opener, which they won.
I believe that was a shutout victory.
It was a shutout victory for the Calgary Flames. But the Calgary Flames were the best team in the Western Conference during the regular season last year.
Were up and down this year.
Were unceremoniously eliminated from the playoffs by the Colorado Avalanche in the first round. They just played in an outdoor game, right? They played
Jets.
Yeah, they played the Jets and lost. Last night, they were the victim of the first lacrosse goal in NHL history. Andrei Svechnikov of the Carolina Hurricanes pulled that off on David Riddick. Lots of highlights of that today. Lots of stories on The Athletic about it, too, from both perspectives, from the Flames and Hurricanes perspectives, if you're interested in reading more about that. But, you know, the Flames, as I mentioned, did have a good season last year. They are a good team. Mark Giordano, Norris Trophy winner last year. Johnny Gaudreau, always a very dangerous player on the ice. So it should make for a good game.
Absolutely. Well, let's just play hypotheticals here, okay?
All right.
Let's say Philip Forsberg does get back in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Do you put him immediately back with Duchene and Granlund? And I guess you could say demote Turris in the lineup?
That's a good question, just because of how well those three played together before Philip left the lineup. And Callie Yarncroke has filled in admirably on Ryan Johansson's line with Victor Arvidsson. So I'm not sure the team is jonesing to break up that combination. So what would make the most sense would be to reunite Forsberg with Duchene and Granlund, and that would be leaving Kyle Turris as the odd man out. But as we've discussed, I think Kyle's played really well this season and deserves more ice time. He's been getting it, centering that line with Granlund and Duchene in Forsberg's absence, but you know, he might, and with how well the Grimaldi Bonino Smith combination is playing, there aren't too many places for Turris to go unless you put him on a line with Colton Sissons and Austin Watson, which I'm not sure if that's a complimentary line, but it's going to make for some tough decisions just because the lineup they've had with Philip out of the lineup has been successful. As we mentioned, they've won 4 in a row. They won in Tampa without Forsberg and Matt Duchene. And they're still scoring goals without Philip, who was off to the best start of his career before he got hurt. So you would think that having him back in there would only make this team better, but it's going to jostle the lines up a little bit that have been working for the last few games.
Do you think this would be what Philip Forsberg is going through right now, which is a lower body injury? He has not played since, the middle of the third period in Vegas?
Yes.
A couple weeks ago?
Yes.
Do you think that if this was the playoffs, he would be playing right now?
That's a good question, because you know who knows what a lower body injury
right.
is, right? It is harder for a player just because you know, if a player has an upper body injury, they can still skate and they can still stay conditioned. But you know, Philip wasn't able to skate as much early on in the recovery process, so he is skating now. And he did practice with the team on Monday, which is a good first sign. That's usually the first step towards returning to the lineup. So if he were to play tomorrow or Saturday against the New York Rangers in the afternoon, I would not be shocked.
I don't think there's really any use in rushing him back.
With as well as the team is playing
yeah.
right now, you don't need to rush him back. But, you know, he is, you know, a dynamic presence, and you know when he's not in there. So even as they're playing well, as we were saying, it only gets better when he gets in there.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. If you haven't heard, ESPN 102.5 The Game, we are going to be sending one lucky listener and a guest to Dallas with the Winter Classic Celebration Flyaway. So starting Monday, November 4th, you need to listen for the cue to call and qualify for a chance to win the grand prize, which includes round-trip airfare and hotel accommodations, a pair of tickets to see Lynyrd Skynyrd at American Airlines Center on New Year's Eve, a pair of tickets to the Winter Classic as the Preds take on Dallas at the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Day, and the winner is going to be announced Friday, November 15th, all prizes courtesy of Outback Concerts. And if you would like more details, visit thegamenashville.com.
Sounds good to me.
That's a good prize.
I mean, I'll be there, of course. Looking forward to it. I've covered one Winter Classic before, the 2015 Winter Classic between the Capitals and Blackhawks at Nationals Park. It was a lot of fun. I could barely see, though, because the press box there is very high, and the ice is very far away.
Yes.
But it was a fun game, and the Predators will be unveiling their Winter Classic sweater on Saturday.
Yes, Saturday at 11 a.m. on the Bridgestone Arena Plaza
so
before they host the New York Rangers.
Make sure you're there to see what that sweater is going to look like.
So that should be a lot of fun. I asked you this question off the air earlier in the show, and it's a question that Chase McCabe and I, Chase McCabe is also in the house this evening if you would like to meet one-third of Darren Donick and Chase, weekdays 10 to 2, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I asked this question of Chase on Monday's edition of Preds Insiders as we were talking about Ryan Ellis, and Ryan Ellis, certainly a great start to this season. I asked him, has Ryan Ellis been the best player on the Preds roster through 11 games? And we had mixed answers.
Mm-hmm.
How would you answer the question now with another game in the books, now 12, who do you think has been the best Preds player through 12 games?
I think it's been Roman Josi, and that worked out well for him. Certainly, he may have driven his price up a little bit with how well he was playing before signing the contract. But Ryan Ellis has been great. I wrote about him on Monday, spoke to him on Saturday morning in Tampa. And he played in all 82 games last year for the first time in his career, had a career high in points, had a career high average ice time per game. And but some, as David Poile said on Darren Donick and Chase last week, that you know Ryan was battling through some things. He seemed a little bit off. And Ryan told me when we talked about that, he said, you know, the fact that I played all 82 with what I was dealing with was an accomplishment in itself, and then also having a career year on top of that. But now Ryan Ellis to me looks like a completely different player in a good way this season. He seems more confident, more poised, seems to be able to do what he wants to do on the ice on both ends. I mean, I think if I was ranking players so far this season, I would say Roman number one, Pekka number two, Ryan Ellis number three.
Who would be number four?
Well, it might have been Philip Forsberg, even with the, you
even
know,
with the injury.
I mean, the way he was playing at the beginning was great. You might have to throw Nick Bonino in there. He's a leading goal scorer for this team now. With
yes.
that, with,
after last night's
after last night's with six goals, and I've been really impressed with Nick Bonino this season. I think he's done a really great job. So I might put Nick Bonino at number four.
Adam Finkin of The Athletic, thank you as always for joining me.
My pleasure.
On Preds Insiders.
Yes. Enjoy Smashville Live. I've warmed up the seat for whichever person is sitting in.
For Adam Finkin of The Athletic, I'm Ryan Poore. Thank you so much for listening to Preds Insiders this evening. Coming up next, it is Smashville Live with Colton Sissons and Ryan Johansson, hosted by Hal Gill and Braden Gull, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.